John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
And again, Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Although to this week, actually, not today, this week, it'll be just Darren and Donick. Chase McCabe will be on the afternoon show with Floyd Reese. So it'll be Chase and the GM this week from 2 until 6 p.m. So he will not be with us. He'll be in the afternoons helping out Floyd with their show. And so you'll be listening for that following our show today. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville, where he's been hanging this whole time. And Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Willie, how was, I guess you had a day off as well. How was your time off and your weekend?
It was good. I went to the Hoosier State and watched a lot of baseball this weekend, and it was good to spend a little time with my son over the weekend, a lot of father-son time, a lot of watching his group on the field, and got back last night, so ready to roll.
Did they face an 87-mile-per-hour pitcher this time?
No, not 87, but they face some really good pitchers, which is the best way to get better. It's tough. This was a tournament with a lot of the best teams from the Midwest. Came down there, and we got put in the top bracket. That's where we wanted to be, and we went 1-3. We probably could have done better, but, it's a great learning experience to face top-level competition. So you go through the tough times as a group, and hopefully it makes you stronger.
Who was the team from what state that stood out?
Well, there was a team from St. Louis that, honestly, they had a great pitcher. He was not overpowering, but he pitched a great game against us and beat us. Then we played a team from the area, a great program called the Indiana Bulls, and they have a lot of tiers. They have two or three levels of teams, and this was their top team, and they beat us. They were very, very good. Felt like we could have played better in both of those games. Then we lost to a team from Kansas City that was, I don't know the story behind them, but they looked like the Kansas City Royals. They played with the exact same uniforms and everything. Faced a guy that pitched a really good game. They beat us. And then we beat a team, I think, from Louisville in the last game. So we ended on a good note, which was tough, which was good to be able to get out of there with a win.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing when you see the size of these kids these days. I don't know, maybe they were that big when we were growing up. It didn't feel like it. I don't remember kids being that big.
Well, here's what it is, and this is, we talked about this some last week. We talked actually a lot about it on Thursday with baseball and their stuff going on right now, the problems of the game. The good and the bad is, and this is the travel ball, right? What happens is you have almost, I don't know if I would say an entire city, but you have, in your big cities, you have probably two or three or maybe four or five programs that are getting all the best players, virtually all the best players. So all the big players and advanced players are gelled together on one team, right? Whereas when you and I were growing up, it was just your neighborhood. Right. And so if you had one or two big kids in the neighborhood, you probably did pretty well. And then you faced the team from the next neighborhood and they had one or two big kids. But now you have, those two neighborhoods plus the next four or five neighborhoods are all taking the best two or three kids. Right. Once you get higher and higher up, that's what's starting to happen. And that's great for the development of those kids. But what about all the other kids? What usually happens? They stop playing in a lot of cases, and they lose interest in baseball. So when they grow up, are they as likely to be big baseball fans and want to go to games? Probably not. And so you're losing sight of something if you're baseball and you're not investing to have more and more people playing the game for longer. And I think that's they're missing the boat. And especially if you're going to cut out the lower minor leagues, that's not going to help it at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because you had that experience. I had the experience of Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge trying to, you know, get back to some normalcy, obviously opening back up. And I've seen it over the years. And was it crowded? Yeah, but was it the levels that I'm used to? No, I don't think it was the levels that I was used to. Are people back there? Yes, in that area. Was it a little concerning seeing people out? Kind of like what we've talked about, really, with you know, no protection or no awareness, really. That was a little, yeah, that was concerning. I think as these teams and as players start coming back, you know, one, I don't know why anybody would be surprised that people are testing positive when they don't have these coaches and these programs. They have no clue what these players have been doing, right? Where they've been, what they've been doing. You know, we should not be surprised all this is happening. I think what's concerning, and then, you know, the numbers are increasing really all over the place. State of Tennessee is one of those states. It just keeps increasing. I think one of the problems is the warm weather, right? Everybody's been cooped up, and the weather's getting nice, and it's summertime, and you're getting out more, and I think that is that's what's happening. That's why this is happening, in my opinion, in some cases, you know, why we're seeing Florida numbers jumping, Texas jumping, Tennessee. I mean, just you're getting nice weather, and people are out and about, and, you know, you got more people, more gatherings. We're not all in our homes, and so, therefore, that once again, it should be the same thing. We should expect these numbers to spike. We should expect numbers to go up, unfortunately, because of that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how all these sports handle, you know, everybody coming back and getting acclimated and start testing positive, because that's going to happen, and how do they handle that, right? It's not if, yeah. It's when. Because it is absolutely
going to happen.
Right. It's what we're seeing.
Currently.
We're seeing cases and you know, there's, you know, already you're the state of Florida, and you've got, you know, MLS and NBA returning, their sports return to play is in that state. But that is going to happen. It's just, I'm very curious, and we've seen it now, it's trickle effect into hockey and how they're going to handle that. And I just, that's why I'm wondering, is how are all these sports entities, how are they going to handle the not if, but when it happens, and how many, how they handle that, right, after that? That's
right.
What I'll be curious to see.
Well, you know, and you had your own experience, you know, out and about. I have too. And what I think about a lot is, because the numbers are going up, right, and that stands to reason, more people are being tested, and when you get back out, the virus is going to spread. So the more you open up, and by the way, our city is now officially in phase 3, which is a good step forward. You know, our city, our county has taken it a little bit slower. Hopefully they'll see some benefits of that, even though the numbers are going to keep going up. But it takes discipline, right? The more it opens up, the more discipline they need to have. The more you're out and going to restaurants and doing the things you normally do, the more discipline you have to have, right? Not only for your sake, but for everybody else's sake. And just like in human nature, some people are more disciplined with this stuff than others. And some people pay more attention than others. Some people are more conscientious than others. Like, we just stayed in a hotel for the first time over the weekend. And the hotel, I thought, did an excellent job. There were not many people staying in the hotel, but, you know, we still went in there and cleaned everything up and, you know, wiped down everything, or just to try to take extra precautions. And then when you go around, just like everywhere else, you know, in Indiana, there was a lot of people wearing masks, and then there was a lot of people not wearing masks. But it's all going to be about the discipline. But what I think is so important is the more we open up, the more disciplined you have to be.
Yep.
Right,
exactly.
It can't be like, oh, we're opening up, everything's okay now. I think that's the tendency that I think a lot of people have, is everything's okay because it's opened up. That's not the case.
Yep, agreed, 100%. And I did the same Wednesday night. We go up early, some of us, just because I don't want to get up first thing Thursday morning and drive straight to a golf course and play 18 holes. I've done that, and I don't enjoy it. So I'd rather just go up Wednesday night, like some of us did, and stay right by the golf course, and we'd stay in a hotel. So that was my first time, too. I just obviously just did it the one night, Wednesday night. But, you know, I will say this. In my experiences out, while it's not like I've got, you know, four pages of examples, but I have enough now to say that the places that I've been and what I've done and experienced, I have felt comfortable. Obviously,
yeah, I have as well.
There's also been places where, you know, in fact, we even did that Wednesday night. We were going to go eat, and we're like, yeah, no, if we – we're not going – you know, there's times when I take one step out, I look, and we 86 it, you know. But the places we've been, I have felt like they're doing what they have to do in these times to stay open, stay safe, and keep, you know, the patrons – safe. I understand it's a risk, and we've talked about that, but I will say this, in my experiences so far, I think companies and people are doing a good job at their workplace of giving you the best level of comfortability, right, of being out and about that they possibly can. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's what I wonder. Is because I do think a lot of people are making effort. Remember, we talked to our buddy Todd Rodemel from the Omni, mm-hmm. and we sort of took his advice about staying at a hotel. He said, stay at a nice brand name place. You know, those brands are going to take the extra steps. They know their business depends on making people feel comfortable. And sure enough, we went to this hotel. You know, there's plexiglass up there. There was no buffets or anything. And you could tell how diligently they had cleaned everything, because they want to make you feel like you're going in there. But we've got, I wonder if we have to go to the next step. I wonder how much the authorities are going to have to just discipline people that don't get it, right? Or the businesses themselves, right? If somebody walks in there and, you know, they're not going through the guidelines, do they have to, I don't know about get kicked out, but do they have to, you know, get warned at least by the manager saying, hey, you know, we've got to do these things. You know, everybody, you're not doing what we need to do here.
I would like to see us. You know, I will admit that in my restaurant experiences, we've not worn a mask because you're sitting down and you're drinking and you're eating.
So yeah, well, you can't while you're eating. You can't wear a mask.
So, but I will say, everywhere else we go, you know, anywhere it's something that doesn't require you eating or drinking, we do. And I maybe would like to see that as we go through this, kind of going back to what you said at the beginning. I get it. Warm weather, more people out, we're opening back up, and that's fine, but let's do it the right way. I just would like to see a little bit. I just, like you said, it doesn't – I don't know if it's half. Sometimes it feels like it's half mask on, and then there's times I'm like – it's not half, and that concerns me, right? It's not even – in fact, some cases, I feel like it's not even close to half the people wearing masks, you know, depending on the establishment, where I've been. But maybe we'd like to see that a lot more. Like, let's just take – like, it's great that the workers at the places are doing it, but how about also when we're not sitting down eating or drinking, how about we are forced to be like them, you know, in their workplace? How about we walk into their store – and just have a mask on for now. I mean, you know, it's things like that. And I would be okay if they said, you need to, you have to. Not need to, you have to.
I'd be okay with that, yeah.
Right? I mean, I'd be okay with that. I mean,
like if you're walking around a grocery store, would it be out of line for the grocery store to have everybody say, hey, you've got to wear a mask when you're walking around? I don't think that's unreasonable.
I don't either. Well, Costco did that, and although that story has died down, so I guess everybody has finally said, okay, well, fine. Because
I don't know if it's just that particular Costco or every Costco, but every store like that, I don't see a reason why you shouldn't wear a mask. Everybody should wear a mask in there just to be sure.
Yeah.
Right? What harm does it do? I mean, you have to get in these habits. When you're sitting down and eating a meal, that's a different thing. Like when you walk in and walk out, you can put a mask on, but obviously when you're taking something, a bite of something to eat, you can't put it through your mask, right? Yeah. You have to do that. So you have to try to. And so in phase three, the restaurants can now be 3/4 full. So once again, we have to be even more careful because we're going to be closer. There's going to be more people. And so it's something we've got to continue to adapt.
No doubt. We played some golf. I played golf on Thursday and Friday, first time I'd swung any clubs in 2020, and I was okay with it. We had a really good time. They're going to be golfing today out at Opryland. We'll tell you what we're talking about, the NFL alumni. Forever Titan Chris Sanders will join us and tell us about that event, and we'll chat with Chris on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. All the years I've known our next guest, we've done things together. We've never done golf.
I don't have any. Damn, man.
I have no clue about his golf game as he
awful
gets excited about our song selection, which is good. Forever Titan Chris Sanders is on the other line, and the tournament today is for the NFL alumni, and it's a charity golf classic where they're going to raise really good money for kids' charities and the American Cancer Society, and it's going to be a Gaylord Springs Golf Club today in Nashville, which is a really nice course. And Chris Sanders, one of our guys, is going to be there along with a lot of former Titans and other players that have played in the NFL. And so you just quickly shot it down. You're not good at all.
I might be the worst golfer ever. You remember was that movie that Adam Sandler played in when he was hitting with the hockey stick?
Yeah.
That's kind of my game right there. But I mean, it is bad. I mean,
you step into it. You take a running start.
Kinda. I mean, it's when I hit the ball comes back to me. That's how bad my golf game is. And let me tell you, this is how bad I don't play golf. I went to go look at my clubs in the garage. There's mold on it. I mean, it's mold. It's got spider webs on it. So I'm going to have to go clean it off before
I've
go.
I've had that happen. Happen to me. Yeah.
Okay, well, you just painted the picture quite well. So no one should expect. So they're just going to hang out with you and get good stories. They're not going with you to help them win a golf scramble.
Negatory. Why? When they see me, if they see me swing it, they're like, "Okay, we know what we got. He's terrible." I mean, they know that I'm going to be on their back the whole time. And if we win a prize, if we win a prize, then we all get a prize. But I'm not going to basically help. Absolutely do zero.
I'm just so disappointed. I mean, you look the part. You could get out there and look the part. I mean, you got those moosicles that you could use and hit the ball really, really far, and you know, win longest drive. I mean,
no, I'm gonna look cute though. I'm going to look cute. I'm telling you that. That's one thing I'm going to do, have my hat looking cool, have some nice press shorts.
Okay.
But the golf game, absolutely awful. I got to tell you a funny story. The first time I played golf was with Derek Mason.
Okay.
And when you start the golf, you used to wear one glove, right? You wear one glove on your left or you wear one on your right. Derek Mason has on his receiver gloves, both of them. He had both receiver gloves on. I'm like, something's not right about this figure. I'm like, are you going to get passes or are you going to go golfing? It was the worst. And his golf game is awful, so I'm not as bad as Derek.
So he wasn't trying to stretch the field in his golf game. He was more looking for those safe routes,
just
8 to 10 yard routes.
Yeah, it took us about 15, 20 minutes to get off the first hole. That's how bad it was.
There's
but when
no
you start
way.
With receiver gloves, oh, it was terrible. Terrible.
There's no way you guys finished then.
Oh, man.
You guys
the people behind us were getting mad, and I'm like, oh, y'all just go ahead. And we kept saying that all day. Okay, y'all go ahead. That's how bad our game was.
Oh, we were talking about this earlier,
yeah.
Chris, and there's so many things that we want to get into with you, but let's start with on the football side of things, because you're a coach, you've been a coach for a long time over at NBA, and when kids start to come back, and this is what all sports are going to have to deal with, right? Like, you don't have a clue what your kids have been doing through all this, right? No idea. What I know, you've probably, I don't know how much you guys do Zoom and how much, you interact with it, but overall, like, you really have no clue what they've been doing, right? And so kids come back, and everybody's going to face somebody or somebody's testing positive, I'm going to be very curious to see how everybody's going to handle, because it's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. Have you guys talked about that as coaches?
And yeah. Yeah, we do. I mean, we talk about everything that goes on in a program to where if kids are in shape or kids get tested positive, well, you have to go over these things because, just like you said, nobody knows. You know, we almost had a situation to where we thought somebody was that had COVID-19, but it come back negative, and we had to prepare to, you know, not have, our workouts anymore. So I just think that what we do as coaches, we just got to make sure that we adjust. And when I say adjust, that means when a situation happens, we got to make sure that we're prepared. And I think the teams that are going to win this year in the championship or in the NFL or any sport is the team that's well prepared. And when I say well prepared, to where is when a situation happens, when somebody on your team that's one of your best players comes down with COVID-19, do you have a backup plan? So I just think that if a team has a backup plan, that's the team that's going to be successful in doing what they need to do.
We talked to you over the years so much about life, and gosh, we've had, you know, while we like to cut up and have fun with you, we certainly have done some deep dives into some really, really serious topics over the years. And, you know, one of those serious topics is what's going on in our country right now. And, you know, how do you feel? I mean, you played sports, you're around it, you had to deal with rowdy fans. I mean, you had to have had your experiences as a black man as well. So, you know, I'm just going to leave it up to you because I know you're more than equipped to always handle these type of topics. Yeah. How do you feel right now, Chris, about some of the things we see?
It's very disappointing. You know, we're fighting each other over a lot of things that's going on. I know we have a lot of injustices. I know a lot of things are going on. But if we don't sit at the table and sit there and discuss, you know, what's going on, then, you know, nothing's going to change. And with me, how I handle it personally, I went through racism. Yes, I got called the N-word. Yes, I got all these things. But the one way I handle it is I love harder. I'm not going to, instead of getting bitter, I'm going to choose to get better. And the way I get better is going to the YMCA, loving somebody that don't look like me. Going to my school at the NBA, loving people that don't look like me. When I go to the gas station, going to people that don't, talking to people and loving people that don't look like me. It's not about how somebody looks. It's about loving their heart. And that's kind of the way I handle it. And I'm not trying to preach to anything, but, you know, I look at everybody as God's creation. So if I love God and their creation, how can I hate you? I just can't. I can't hate you if I have the creator in my heart that loves. So I have to love you. But the one thing we have to do in this world is we can't keep playing tennis. And when I say we keep playing tennis, is we keep hitting insults to each other. Okay, you did this to me, I did that to you, and all we're doing is playing tennis. We got to sit down and say, listen, I love you. Let's figure out this thing together, not as a white man, not as a black man, not as an Hispanic man, not as a person of a different ethnicity. Let's just look at each other and respect each other as a human race. And if we can just do that and say, you know what, I love you just because, then we can go to the next phase. And kind of just going on a little bit more, is I talked to my mom about this situation, because my mom grew up where she went through racial prejudice, and, you know, she couldn't drink out of the water fountains, and, you know, getting harassed and getting chased by dogs and all these things. But this is what she said. She said, in this home, we're going to practice love. Doesn't matter what happens outside, but in this house, we're going to practice love. So if we can, as parents and as adults and as teachers and as leaders, and say, in this house, we're going to practice love. In this school, we're going to practice love. In this community, I'm going to practice love. And if we practice love, then now we're going to be successful in everything that we do.
It's a great message. I'm glad you brought up your mom. So the three of us are basically very close, similar in age, and while we've come a long ways, and yet you just told stories that are not acceptable, but we still, I feel like we've been progressing as a society, getting better, but obviously we're having major lapses, and now it just feels like the, you know, forward progress has stopped, and now maybe because of some bad and very, very unfortunate incidents, maybe we are going to turn a corner and mash the gas pedal again and start heading in the right direction. But are you still surprised that, I mean, you know, the Bubba Wallace story yesterday at Talladega, and just some of the stuff that's happening. Can you believe, while we've made progress over the years and decades, that we're still talking about stuff like that in 2020?
But you know what it is, Darren? we can have all the policies, we can have all the marches, we can have saying what people need to change, but if the heart is not changed in the person, then the behavior is not going to change. So it's about changing the person's heart. Let me share this story with you. I think it was in 1992. I went to Kirk Herbstreit's hometown. I don't know if it was hometown, but we went to go visit somewhere. Me, Kirk Herbstreit, and Joey Galloway. And as we're walking out in the streets, I'm just gonna say it, but just bear with me. But with a guy, a couple of, about four other guys are driving by us, and they scream out this word. They say, "You effing niggers." And as I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, are we still going through this today? And as I'm watching, Kirk Hershey starts to chase the car to try to get those guys and say, man, why are you talking about my friends? And me and Joy started to talk and say, man, why in the 90s we're still going through this? Why are we calling each other names? Why are we saying the N-word? Why do we have to face all this stuff when it's the 90s? But until the hearts change, their behavior is not going to change.
Talking to Chris Sanders. Forever Titan, and always love having conversations like this with him. Chris, you have a message that I think is so good. Our friend Tony Kemp, who came on the show, he's got this thing called the plus one effect, and it sounds like you've got a similar philosophy that if you can just rub off on one person, and Tony sort of challenged us and everybody to do the same thing. Just have those conversations and like set the example, like you're saying, with people that don't look like you. You've already probably had that plus one effect times however many, but that seems like great, a small step that we can all do. And I cannot imagine how many people you've influenced in a positive way that way. And I'm sure you want to keep doing that.
I do. And the reason why is because, you know, my heart wants to be filled with love. We always talk about making change. It's not about making change on a global, but it's just making change at the YMCA, making change when you go to the gas station. I remember about 2 weeks ago, I went to do yoga. Yeah, I do hot yoga. I did it. And a Caucasian lady comes up to me, and she starts crying. And she says, I'm sorry for everything that we put you through. And I said, whoa, what are you talking about, we? She said, I'm sorry for what all my people did to you. And I said, hold on, let me tell you something. Regardless of what happened, I love you. And I hugged her, and she cried, and that's where it starts. And I want to share this. I'm going to say a little illustration. I know we got to go, but I'm going to give an illustration. I'll kind of bring back my point back together. But I remember watching a football game one time, and, this team, Alabama, was beating this team like 70-0. And they were beating this team real bad, and there was two guys on the sideline, and they were fighting. So instead of focusing on the good game that was going on, the camera started focusing on the fight on the sidelines. And I look at that because that's how our world is today. We got this great world. We got this great United States, but we're fighting on the sidelines. We're fighting with injustices. We're fighting with racial stuff. We have racial slurs. We just had a situation, what you guys just talked about a black guy finding a noose in his locker. I mean, we're fighting on the sidelines when we have this great United States. So what we got to do is, as a people, not a black, white, orange, or green, but as all human race, we need to get from fighting on the sidelines, getting into the game, and enjoying this great country that we have, the United States.
I want to ask you one more, Chris, because I remember one of the first times I think we ever had you on the show, you threw this out there, and I have not forgotten it. We talked about Grantland Rice, this legendary sports writer. Joe Rexroad wrote a piece in The Athletic on him and, you know, the complex history, right? He was progressive for the times, maybe, but when you look at his writings, you can see some of the overtones, the stereotypes that get put in there. But one of the people he covered, and he was actually in Berlin, was Jesse Owens at the Olympics in 1936. And so you actually broke Jesse Owens' Ohio State sprinting records, right?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Where
Ohio State?
Yeah,
Ohio State. So how much did you study him? I'm curious.
You know,
so first of all, tell the story.
It's funny because, you know, when I broke his record, it was like, you just broke Jesse Owens' long jump record indoors. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But what I did is I went to go do some study on it, and I actually watched a movie that came out about 3 or 4 years ago, and I watched all the stuff that he went through, all the, you know, he couldn't go into hotels, he couldn't eat at restaurants, he went through all these things. But this is what makes him a hero. It doesn't make him a hero that he won the 100-meter dash. He doesn't make the hero that he won a 200 dash. He doesn't make him a hero that he won 4 gold medals in the Berlin Olympics. This is what makes him a hero. In spite of all the stuff that he went through, he's still loved. So I'm honored to break his record, but I'm more honored that I watched this man go through adversity and still love. So that's the example that I'm going to follow.
So that had to be meaningful to you, not just to break his record, but to study his history.
Yeah. He went through a lot. I mean, I went back and watched his movie again, and just watching what he went through and watching to where, you know, he went through racism, even in when he bought a house and, you know, with his wife and his kids and, you know, couldn't go to restaurants. And but here's the thing. If you watch the movie, because I watched it about 4 months ago, and you watched how instead of him getting mad at his Caucasian or white guys that were on his team, he loved them. And guess what? Those same guys that he loved fought for him when he was going through injustice. So they did it together. So that's why, guys, dog, that's why I love this story so much. Because if a movie can get it right, why can't we as a society get it right? And just like Remember the Titans, I love this quote. When I was watching Remember the Titans, you know, the girl at the end, when she's talking, she says, in our town, people say that black and white can't coexist. But in this town, we make it work. See, that's what we got to do in this world. You may look different to me, but I'm going to make it work. You may come from a different background, but let's make it work. That's the attitude that I'm taking. Yeah, we're going to kneel. Yeah, you have protests. All that stuff is great. But this, you know how I'm going to make it work? Is I'm going to love somebody that does not look like me, because I'm intentionally loving you. Not because I have to. It's because I want to.
How much do you guys think you'll talk to your team about this stuff, or do you even need to? I mean, I don't know. I feel like sometimes we get a little carried away with acting like it doesn't exist in sports locker rooms, which I think you would probably say that's just not true. And I get it. You reference Remember the Titans, and we've got movies that show it, but. You know, how much do you guys think you'll have to talk about it to your team?
You know what? Even before this even happened, all the situation that's been going on, you know, Coach Uvarad does a great job. He's our head coach at NBA. He talks about it all the time.
Really?
You know, because all the time. So even before this, he talks about it all the time because he says this. He says, if we don't have it together as coaches, how do we expect these kids to have it together? I mean, all our coaches are different ethnicity. We have black, white, mixed, all kind of people. And he says, if we don't have it right, how we expect these kids to have it right? If we don't love in our room, how we expect these kids to love? So Coach Uvarad talked about all these things before this even happened, because if we don't love each other as a family, how are we going to win as a family? How am I going to say that let's go beat Brentwood High, let's go beat Pearl Cone, if I can't love the person beside me? You're not going to win games.
That's a great message.
Not going to win games. And the same thing with society. How can we say we have this beautiful country, we got these beautiful things, we have beautiful freedom, all these things, but we can't walk together as a human race? It doesn't work like that. Listen, Darren, I love you guys. I know we laugh and we joke and we cut up and I talk about, you know, how bad an athlete you are, all these things. But I love
you. Don't have to go there.
You. I know, you know I'm kidding. But you know, I really, really, really love you guys, not just because you're on the radio, but because you're God's creation, and I love you guys with all my heart.
Well, we feel the same way about you. You know that, and I hope our friendship and our relationship
always
over the years has really meant a lot to me and to us.
Me too.
We have just as crazy conversations off the air as we do on the air, maybe even crazier, which are always fun to me. But thanks for doing this. By the way, do you know anything about teammates fighting on the sidelines? Have you ever seen that before? Oh, wait a minute. Never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 99. You remember 99?
Did you get some teammates? Fight?
No. You had teammates that were fighting on the sidelines over the seat. Who was sitting in whose spot? Do you remember that?
Oh, D. Lewis tried to beat me up. Yeah, because I sat in the seat. Hey, I almost put them hands on him, man. You know about me. I put them hands on him.
I would say hit him straight, but after what you said at the beginning, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Just go have fun.
Hey, appreciate you guys. Thank you for letting me come on the radio.
Raise some good money. Thanks for doing
what
you do, Chris.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, man. Bye-bye.
All right, that is Forever Titan. Chris Sanders, NFL Alumni Charity Golf Classic, is today out of Gaylord Springs Golf Club, and they are trying to raise good money for kids' charities and the American Cancer Society. And there's a lot of big names out there, Eddie George and Neil O'Donnell, and I lost track of the guys like Chris Sanders and others will be out there. It's a fantastic event. I think Al Smith heads all this up every year, and so we appreciate Chris coming on as always, and not afraid to tackle any subject we throw his way. We will come back with more on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Forever Titan Chris Sanders for joining us. Teron Davenport just around the corner to kick off the second hour. Also, This Is What I Know in the second hour. We've got a $25 gift card on the line for Tin Roof for your best This Is What I Know. Don't forget rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC reports, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee to support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Good message from them. I don't know. I brought it up in the Chris Sanders interview, and Talladega got rained out. In fact, they will postponed because of bad weather yesterday. Drove through a lot of bad weather coming home yesterday morning and afternoon. And evidently that was all over the place. So it seemed to be a lot of bad weather, and it postponed Talladega. The race at Talladega, they will start today at 2 o'clock this afternoon to try to get that cup race in. But unfortunately, with the story that came out later that night yesterday, about what happened in the garage, in the pit, the garage area for Bubba Wallace, of course, who drives the number 43 car for Richard Petty Motorsports. It just was beyond, like, at first, I was like, please tell me this is a joke, right? Like, this is just some, like, bad, is this like Sports Onion? Is this just a really, really bad attempt to get attention? And then, you know, obviously that was wishful thinking, and it was very, very quick that you realized, oh my gosh, that actually happened, where a noose was left in his stall area, or in his garage area. And Marty Smith took to SportsCenter last night with Scott Van Pelt and had this to say.
Well, first of all, I feel like a fool because I just told you, not an hour ago, 90 minutes ago, that the sport had come so far, and then we see this. And I will tell you that I spoke to a senior NASCAR official just a few moments ago, and they reiterated that statement. They're going to find who this person is. They're going to eliminate this person from the sport forever, because this sport is moving forward. This sport is in a progressive mode. This sport is in a moment where this crap, this despicable crap, is not only not acceptable, but there's just no place for it. And whomever that is, I hope that you are so ashamed of yourself. I hope that you realize that that is someone's dignity, and that is someone's positioning in this sport who has earned his place by talent and by hard work, and he stood up for something that he believed, and he asked for help from other people who believe similarly. And that the measures were taken to start taking those steps. And then we come down here to a place that I love. I love Talladega, Alabama. It's my favorite place on the NASCAR tour. It's my favorite race. I love the staff here. And then I'm about to say words I'm not allowed to say. Something like this happens in the garage area? In the garage area of Richard Petty's race car? For a young man in Bubba Wallace who has galvanized so many people because he was willing to stand up for something that is so long overdue. And NASCAR's current management level, executive level, agrees that it was time to take this stand. And then somebody goes and does this. You're not just hurting one or two people, whomever you are. You're hurting a whole lot of people who have made the decision that it's damn sure time to go be better. And it pisses me the hell off. And it pisses everybody else in the sport off who care. Who care not only for Bubba, but for every single person that he is standing up for.
That was some of Marty Smith's pretty powerful message last night on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. And if you have not seen or heard the story, a noose was found in the garage area of Bubba Wallace. I've been in those NASCAR garage areas. They had opened up Talladega for 5,000 fans to attend. That would be the case today. And I feel very comfortable. By the way, the FBI is investigating this. They are part of, they're going to figure out who did this, because I have to believe that they are absolutely, I know how that area functions and works, Willie. They're going to figure out who did this. And the person who did it, their days in that sport are over. Whoever is behind this, they'll be banned from the sport. There's not a doubt in my mind, and they're going to get caught. I feel very comfortable saying that, because it's pretty tight-knit, and it's going to get out, and they're going to ruffle a lot of feathers to figure out who did this. It's unacceptable. I don't even it's hard for me to even comprehend this, because I guess when you never think like that, I don't even understand how someone could even – how an act like that would even cross their mind. It's just disturbing to hear that, but they're going to find them, and their days in NASCAR are over. I have no doubts about it. I feel very good. That's what I know. And I know I'm doing this early, about an hour early, but that's what I know. They're going to find this person or persons, whoever's behind this.
Well, I hope so. And I hope that anybody who knows something about it would call them out, right? As Marty Smith said, they don't just let anybody back there, right? Did the guy or whoever did that, did they act alone? Were there other people that know and or look the other way? I'd like to know. I mean, let's get a discussion going on this. But really, I'm not that surprised. I mean, when you make a bold statement, I mean, if you study history,
sure,
right? You know, Jackie Robinson's story. There was pushback, right? There's going to be pushback, but I think that can be a positive, because now I think more and more people are going to come to the side and to really push the cause for Bubba Wallace. At least that would be my hope. Right, is he might have way more people in his corner than he had before. And now this is another opportunity for NASCAR to show a strong response, not just catching the person that did this, the one person, but take it, you know, have it motivate you and drive you to continue to move this forward. It wasn't going to happen overnight. Just because you outlawed the flag, that doesn't mean everything's going to be okay from here on out, right? It's got to be a process. It's got to be something that you keep working at. You're going to have to keep working at. You know, programs to get more diversity within your drivers, within your teams, you know, your policies, your system, all of that is going to take time. And I'm hoping that it starts with what Bubba Wallace did and the drivers did, and now it's fueled by dumb stuff like this that this guy did. But, you know, whoever did this. You see what I'm saying, Darren? It's great. We want to catch the person that did this. But I hope it becomes a catalyst to drive the whole process forward so that NASCAR can really make some real true progress and change with their entire system. I mean, it stands to reason there was going to be pushback, right?
No question. You knew
so this may not be the last one. This may not be the last one. This is an easy one, right? I think the one that's harder is the people that, you know, maybe don't say anything, mm-hmm. right? But deep down in the corners, you know, they still are, I don't know about this, man. No Confederate flag. You know, there's what about our history, our heritage? You know, there's that whole group that you have to, that's not going to put a noose in somebody's locker, That's an easy one to see. We can all see that. But it's the whole system that needs to be refined and pushed forward, and it needs a lot of people. So that's the hopefully the catalyst that comes out of this is people say, enough is enough, man. Let's do something, and let's make this better.
Well, the flag was still involved, a part of the race, unfortunately. I don't know if you saw where there was a Cessna plane flying overhead over the speedway, super speedway, that had, you know, one of those banners behind it, a Confederate flag, and it said defund NASCAR. They kept flying around the track, and
yeah,
evidently
there's going to be pushback.
People,
there's going to be pushback. You're going to have to fight that.
Of Talladega had, you know, you're right. It's you knew that right. This is not going to see. It's going to be met with resistance. You're right. It's just wow. I don't know why I'm in such amazement about. I don't know why I'm so wowed by that. I don't know. I guess, like I said, I wouldn't even think that would be, somebody would even think like that, but that's kind of naive and silly for me to say. I get it. But I do feel good that they're going to figure out. And the good news is NASCAR is a part, you've heard me say on the show, we've turned a corner. And what that means is, I don't know. I don't know how much that means. What is it enough? No, but it's turning a corner. As in, you've turned the corner and you're going the right direction. GPS is telling you you're going the right way. At least it's not telling you turn around and go the other way. We've turned a corner and we're going the right way. And NASCAR's a part of that, which is good, right? I mean, I don't know if I ever thought. I mean, this flag situation is not something new in the sport of NASCAR. This is not a new subject matter. But I don't know if I ever thought I would see where they would ban the flag, Confederate flag, from their races. And they did. And the fact that they are, you know, they are very adamant about how they will not tolerate this behavior, you know, is encouraging. Because I do think it was a sport that was, you know, because of their grassroots and their some of their fan base, I think it was a sport that was certainly not proactive. And they were barely reactive in anything. They've been kind of dragging their feet for a long time. And so these are real steps in the right direction, where it looks like the powers that be in the sport are very, very adamant that none of this, you know, is going to be tolerated, and that they are going to try to appeal. You remember our conversation with Bernard Pollard. They have actually picked up new fans, you know, some athletes, current and former athletes, and that are applauding NASCAR for actually doing something, because they probably felt the same way I did. Like, they didn't think they would probably see this in their lifetime, but it's happening. And so, on one hand, they've been getting praised for that, and now they're going to deal with this. But you, like you said, you knew this was going to happen, right? It was not going to just go away quietly, and nothing was going to be said or done. And it won't be the last time, either, unfortunately. You know, there's going to be other things that happen. I don't know what the story will be, but other things will happen on this front, and they're going to have to deal with that. But I think the first thing to do is to start by taking care of this story, finding out who's responsible and who's behind this, and eliminating them from the sport. They go bye-bye. They go away forever. And then they get, you know, hopefully publicly shamed. You know, I hope that it's out there. And so we can all see, and they get, you know, they get publicly shamed for this. I don't know who these people are or who this person is. I don't know if they care or don't care. Obviously, if they have that mindset, I'm not sure they care about anything. So, but that's the first step, is for them to figure out who's behind this and take care of that.
I agree. And remember, the whole issue that we've been talking about a lot in many forms is systematic racism, right? And so that is the reminder for NASCAR, right? You're trying to hopefully change the system. Right, you're trying to make your system better, which means you're going to have some pushback. You're going to have some backlash. It's going to take different forms than just this one yo-yo that puts the noose in there. Right, we want to find that person, but also you're going to have people that say, "Well, I'm not going to go to the races anymore if I can't do that." You know, you got to be prepared to deal with that, and you might have to take a financial hit in the short term to win and change the system in the long term, and hopefully gain fans and make your sport more appealing to more people in the long term. So that's the long term challenge. We have the short term challenge of trying to find the person, right? And then the long term challenge that is not going to happen overnight, but they've started down this path. And this is a reminder that it's not going to be an easy path, right? It's going to take constant effort and it's going to take constant resources. And I hope they're up for it. They're off to a good start.
I feel like they are. That's why I said
I think this is going to fuel it more. Don't you think? This has a chance to fuel it even more.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, we will come back. Sorry, I was just looking. Looks like Richard Petty is going to be heading in the garage. There's some stuff out there on that. So we'll keep a close eye on this. I'll be curious to see if anything comes out during the course of our show. Because NASCAR is currently working with law enforcement on figuring out who is responsible and behind this. They will pick up their racing today at 2 o'clock our time at Talladega. We will start hour number two on the other side. We'll talk with TD, Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. He covers the Titans and does a really good podcast that he releases on Wednesdays. And you can always hear it also on our airwaves here on 102.5 The Game. We will talk with him next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.